This is an interview with Evan Williams, also known as Snow Williams, on Saturday, 11th of October 2014. The interview is for the Canterbury History Foundation, funded by the 2014 Canterbury Community History Award. The interviewer is Kim Newth. The interview is being recorded at 5 Corbett Crescent at the Anthony Wilding Retirement Village Christchurch. The interviewer will also be taking shorthand notes during this interview. This is file number F004. So we were talking about life at Burnham Camp before, and I'm just wondering if you had much time off away from camp and how you spent that time.
We had weekend leave, or just Friday night leave, or Saturday night leave, depending on what duties we had. It was pretty relaxed without a lot of troops in camp. I think our major job was having school cadets in camp and training them, which was a nice change from training mature men. We had Christ College came in, St Andrew's College.
Is this just after the end of the war, you mean?
But we had to keep our own training up to date too.
And so how did you use that weekend leave, and was it mostly to visit family?
I'd go and see my folks.
Yes,
Living in Christchurch. I didn't go home and then go to a dance. I'd spend the weekend with my folks.
They would have been pleased to see a bit more of you.
So near and yet so far.
So memories of VE Day and VJ Day in Christchurch, did you take part in those celebrations? Do you remember much about it?
I remember VE Day was work as usual. VJ Day was a different thing. Nearly everybody in camp marched out. I'm not even sure that there was a camp guard on. Most of us walked into town from Burnham. Some of us got a ride, but most of us managed to walk in. And it wasn't all that exciting when we got in to town.
You go to the square, Cathedral Square?
Yeah.
And what was happening there? Just people?
Oh, thousands of people partying. But then I still had to go home to my folks. and they're not drinkers, so I really couldn't go drinking and then going home.
Right, so it was...
Yeah, it was nice.
I'd sort of wondered whether you had the option then to leave the army, but you were saying before that you didn't. You actually have to stay.
We were classed as regular soldiers, regular force, being instruction staff, and we were told that we would have at least 2 years service from the time that peace was signed. All they had was ceasefire, I think, at that time with Japan. So there was a bit of time to go and a lot of haggling at political level before we ever were going to get a date. But we were told that if we went in the occupation force, then our time would be considered up, and most of us decided that that's what we want to do. I had a work plan. From my time in Timaru, and I thought I'd like to continue with that. So I wanted to get out and carry on with studies and start to make a new life.
Right, yes, yeah. And what was your work plan? Like, what did you want to be
Stage? I'd been in local bodies to jump ahead a bit, when I did get out of the army, I went back to Timaru. I was employed at South Canterbury Catchment Board as rates clerk, and that again was a local body.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went to Geraldine. I was assistant county clerk, and for a time I was acting county clerk.
Going back to 1945-46, so you would have been, you know, again, just Burnham, between, you know, before you went to Japan, you would have just been carrying on with the training at Burnham.
Yes.
Yeah. And right. Your rank also improved, didn't it?
Improved, yeah.
Mm.
I'm not one for talking about rank.
No.
I guess some guys might rely on their former rank to impress, but I've done a lot of other things.
No, yeah. Although I suppose it was the rank that enabled you to have that role of, being the mortar platoon commander.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah, because I think you had to be a second lieutenant for that.
Yeah.
So you would have volunteered then to serve with J-Force, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was with the 2nd New Zealand Expeditionary Force, wasn't it, as part of this occupation force. Yeah. And
I was in 2-7 Machine Gun Battalion as part of that.
Right, yeah. So why that particular battalion?
How were just appointed.
You were just appointed to it, yeah. And what were you told about Japan, you know, in briefings before you went? Like, I sort of wonder what your expectations were about what it was going to be like.
What were we told? We didn't have that sort of information.
Mm.
You're told you're going to Japan.
And to pack your bags.
Yeah. Our information was zero. We weren't allowed to have any friendly relationships with Japanese people. There was a problem with STDs.
Yes.
We wouldn't be very welcome. We thought we knew that. And we were there literally as an occupation force.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of it.
Right. And obviously you would have had that apprehension of possible invasion from Japan leading up to that time.
Yes,
so
yeah,
you wouldn't have been necessarily looking forward to going there, I imagine, in that sense, you know.
Remember the first words of Japanese I learnt were "Benjo wa doko desu ka?" "Benjo wa doko desu ka?" And that is, "Where is the toilet?"
Right.
And I didn't ever have to use it.
Why was that?
Because you could smell them.
Oh, I knew you were going to follow up with something like that. I have heard them referred to as, what was it, honeypots or something, those night carts.
They were the carts that
carried the
waste away and spread it on the paddocks.
Yes, and they obviously, it obviously meant that there was a distinctive smell in the air much of the time.
All the time.
Yeah. I think you talked the other day about what J-Force was there for. I mean, maybe just say that again, what you saw as its role.
Purely to have a presence there. Any sort of an uprising was beyond us, because with our very small numbers and their millions, we wouldn't have stood much of a show of impressing them. So we were there to show our strength, but not press it. And to cut a long story short, I think we changed things quite a lot and were able to be friendly with our Japanese neighbours. We're able to speak to them. We're able to be kind to them. And I've got this photographic history of 27 Battalion, which would probably show you that we had a relationship which was far greater than that of just an occupying force. And that the people actually respected us.
Right, yes, yeah. And the ship you travelled, well, I should also just sort of say, I guess you would have been apprehensive, though, about how you would have been received before you went. I mean, there would have been that...
I think we were prepared to be disliked. We were prepared to be to understand that we were different.
And the ship you went out on, that was...
The Daneira.
Daneira, right. I think that left, I was reading one of those books, that would have been about July 1946,
something like that.
Yeah, and that was a troop ship, wasn't it? So it was a lot of men on board, and nurses as well?
There were nurses on board.
So it would have been about a two-week trip, I think.
A bit longer than that,
yeah. Was it smooth seas, or, I mean, they could be a bit rough sometimes.
We had a bit of a typhoon, right. But we managed that.
Yeah. What were the conditions like on board that...
Bloody awful.
Yeah. Crowded and...
Oh, yeah, and very, very unfamiliar. We managed fine. We were able to sunbathe on deck and... really to just sit around and chat. We were interested in what was going on, but we were jammed in.
And water would have been in short supply.
It certainly wasn't a tourist ship.
No, yeah. So what were your first impressions of Japan and the Japanese? I mean, it was a pretty broken country at that time, wasn't it? A lot of homelessness and...
Well, we were very well. We'd had needles for good
malaria and things.
Hydrocephalus the night that we arrived at Kure, and we were up sort of standing in queues, filing past people with needles, and people were passing out. We were pretty tired by the time we managed to get off the ship. First thing that we saw was some female labourers working on a ship next to us or near us, and they were working harder than our guys at home worked on ships. They were absolute slaves. Which was a bit of a shock.
I've heard that mentioned before. This aspect of the women doing hard physical labour was something that I think struck a lot of people, didn't it? And there would have been you would have seen a lot of beggars in the streets, I guess, as well. And
well, we didn't get into the city very much. We were straight from the ship onto a train to take us to Yamaguchi, which was someplace way down there. We didn't really know where or how. So we had to just sit in the train. Now, the unfortunate thing again was that we left New Zealand in wintertime. And we had thick battle dress uniforms. We arrived in Japan in summertime, middle of summer. with thick belt drews.
Oh, dear.
And we had to sweat our way all the way down to Yamaguchi in the train with smelly toilets and, God, no washing. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Was it a long trip?
Yeah.
Made longer by the conditions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound... And what were you seeing out of the window? Was it...
Strange. Paddy fields. The rail ran down the coastline, so we saw lots of the sea. Passed lots of villages, and we passed through Hiroshima, where the bomb had been let off, and were staggered at the sight of that.
So they wouldn't... is it just the sheer scale of the...
Yeah. It was more like Christchurch after the earthquake. And there were beggars there on the railway station.
And there wouldn't have been many buildings standing, presumably. No. Nothing.
Very little.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, that would have been hard to... And I suppose it's the first...
That was the eye-opener, really. We're here.
And I was going to say that, because up until that point, it had all been at a distance.
Yeah. But it was only just in our heads.
Yeah, but actually seeing that up close, And the scale of devastation from that bomb must have just been something else.
Well, it was even worse when later on we managed to get to Tokyo and see the devastation there. Amazing.
Buildings down and... Yeah, and I guess there would have been people injured wandering around or with injuries.
I think the atomic injuries were the real disfigurements. A lot of the people died as a result of the nuclear sickness.
Did it change your attitudes? You know, I remember, some people from that time, it made them become quite, opposed to nuclear weapons, I suppose, but did it change?
We didn't really think about it.
No, in that way.
So close, we hadn't had time.
No.
I think it was the beginning of our thinking about nuclear weapons, and that developed over the years.
Do you think it's a right thing for New Zealand that we are nuclear free?
Absolutely.
So, and there would have been a lot of poverty in Japan at that time as well. It's not, we think of it now as being a very advanced, affluent kind of place, don't we? But
where we were, really were, there wasn't the centre of population. It wasn't a place where big political decisions were made. We were people were told what to do, and they just followed along, followed their masters. I use the word simple. I mean uncomplicated people. Who just took things as they came. They didn't, it appears that they didn't know any different. They were used to the warlords of their past, and they knew that they were powerless. On the other hand, they still had a lot of national pride, and the people that we were really afraid of, if that's the word, were the ex-military Japanese who'd lost a war and were home and lost a lot of pride and whom we couldn't really foretell what their actions were going to be.
There were some arsons and things, weren't there? Arsons, fires.
Oh, yeah, but... That was nothing to do with...
No.
There was...
accident rather than... So you started off in Yamaguchi. That was at the 27th camp, was it?
Yeah. That was battalion headquarters.
Battalion headquarters. So what... How long were you there for, and what was it like when you got there?
I really don't remember, but I know that for us, it was a new beginning. I had a new platoon. I had people that I had never met before, didn't know their abilities, and we had to start training all over again from, marching, drills, discipline, and weapon training. That was all new to us.
Yes.
And we had to be prepared. So it was a couple of 3 months of intensive training.
And these men were from all over too, I think you were saying. Mm. Yeah.
Our CO had been through Greece and Crete, and he was a very tough character and wouldn't put up with anything short of sort of perfection.
Who was that?
Colonel Titchener, W.F.
Right, yes.
W.F. Titchener.
Bill Titchener, yeah.
Bill.
Yeah, or William. And... So you were kind of answerable to him, I guess, as it were, yeah.
Not directly, no. My platoon was answerable to our to support company, OC, and I got a mate here in the village who was a machine gun officer in the same company.
So what's his name? I suppose I should ask, shouldn't I?
George Morrow.
George Morrow, okay. And the... So that other chap you said was like your OC, the support company. What was... Can you remember his name? Or not that it necessarily matters if you can't.
Oh, well, we had a number of changes.
Yes. So the so when you arrived, like what were the arrangements like? You know, where did you sleep and what were the living conditions like?
Well, we had junior officers' quarters, not far from the officers' mess. And we settled down very quickly. I remember my first glass of Japanese beer was like heaven. We were back in humanity, in civilization again.
Did you have that at the camp?
In the mess.
Yes. Yeah, because I get the impression the mess was pretty much the centre of everything, was it?
Yeah.
And, you know, were things well organised, would you say? Or
And the army's always... managed to be pretty well organised. The one thing that we had to get used to as well was there were officers from all around New Zealand, all sorts of backgrounds. I think we talked about it. guys who'd been in Fleet Air Arm, the guys who'd been in the Navy, guys who'd been in 2NZF in Egypt, those in ex-Italy. We had a great mixture of people. We had the English Navy guy.
So making that all kind of cohere must have been
interesting
at times.
Everybody seemed to know their job. And we had to get to know them. One of the lessons I learnt in the army was intelligent anticipation.
Yes.
And where we should know pretty well as a result of our knowledge of our fellow, where they are, what they're doing, and what their actions would be at this time in an emergency, in an hour's time, in an emergency.
Mm. You get to know people very well.
We had to know them inside out. And that was also part of our training, self-training. But it was highly necessary that we should know what to do in an emergency and to know who would be backing us and where they're likely to be. I carried that into the city life as part of my normal work.
You were saying that after Yamaguchi, you then transferred to Bofu,
yeah.
And then finally Tokuyama,
yes. We were Bofu, and things changed there because we weren't just training flat out. My platoon and I had to go and search a map square each day, looking for weapons and military gear that the Japanese might have hidden.
And that would have involved going through people's houses sometimes?
Not like that. More caves and old buildings. And the interesting thing was our normal transport was a motor carrier, track view. That involved travelling over dirty, dusty roads.
I was going to ask you about the conditions of the roads. Like backcountry roads here, I suppose.
The carriers rode beautifully over all sorts of terrain, but that was our normal transport.
Right.
Again, our difficulty was how to communicate with carriers on a 1,000-yard block. How the hell do you find them again?
Right, yes.
So I'll tell you a story later on about having to use a whistle, which was the only communication. We didn't have radio, no RT. We were stuck with...
So why was that? Is that just because...
They didn't have them.
They just didn't have them. No. Yeah, it seems we're so used to being able to communicate over distance now, aren't we, with cell phones and things, but
We're very primitive.
I was going to say, with those mortar carriers, did you feel safe travelling in them? I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they threw a track.
Yeah.
No, they were good.
Yeah. So the...
Again, we had to make do when we threw a track and we needed repairs. It took all of our ingenuity to get back on the road again, but we always managed.
Yeah, I was going to say, how would you have done that? You would have had to have propped it up.
With great difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the so in terms of how the platoon itself was organised, I'm not, hugely familiar, because there's normally sections, aren't there? So you have three different sections or something?
Six. You had six mortar.
With about how many men in each one would you have had then?
Four or five
men, yeah. So you would have had to have organised those sections and what they were. So you would tend to travel together.
Yeah.
But then they'd spread out in different directions.
Once we got to our search site, we had to spread out from there. And be pretty clear on times that people had to report back to the central point.
Right, because I was going to say, to have no radios and to have, you must have felt that weight of responsibility at times when you think you're only, 21 or something, and you've got all these men who've peeled off into the Japanese countryside.
Listen, you're thinking with a 2014 background. We didn't have that background. We didn't know any better. Mm. We were stuck with what we had. We had to make it work. But it was extremely bloody difficult. Extremely. But it worked. We made it work.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever have to go out looking for, you know, sections that hadn't come back?
No, they were pretty good. Yeah. We managed to find people had broken down or whatever. We knew where they, the direction they'd gone, and we got it back on the road.
And did you have much success in actually finding this equipment? No, yeah.
Let's go back to the beginning. What was our purpose in being there?
Yeah.
To show of strength.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, that's what we did. We showed the natives that we were there, and we weren't overbearing. We were... Sorry.
That's all right.
We were pretty thoughtful about how we dealt with them. And I think that by our very demeanour, we managed to impress them that we weren't going to be difficult and we could be trusted.
And you had particular friends or... you talked about Bill Henderson, I think. Did how did you come to know each other?
Well, he's another officer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you just used to kind of give each other a bit of mutual support, I guess.
We knew all of the... even our senior officers.
Yeah. And obviously he was someone you kept in touch with after the war, and because he was local boy as well, yeah. So so the risks involved with doing these searches, you know, were there any particular incidents you recall that, you know, situations where you were thinking it's not...
I don't think so, no. It was run of the mill.
And no one ever tried to stop you, the locals or anything?
No.
So I think that you touched before that people, you know, I mean, it's been generally observed, I think, that people were fairly compliant.
I think we showed mutual respect.
Yes. Now, so... I was going to say it would be good to get back to the use of this whistle, wouldn't it? How you communicated.
All right. Well.
So you wore yours on around your neck.
A lanyard.
Yeah. And when did you? You know, what were the situations where you used it?
Well, if we tried to call people back, and they were with hearing distance. The whistle was the easiest one, so just having to drive the carrier cross country to find somebody.
So that was pretty much something you had on you all the time.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a story about it. Some months later, I was a defence officer in Provost Courts. And I was in the brigade mess in...
This is Chofu. Back in Christchurch.
In Chofu.
Mm-hmm.
And a captain came up to me and said, you're improperly dressed. And I said, I don't think so, sir. And he said, well, officers don't wear lanyards. I said, well... I have it there because I need it. It's part of my work equipment. So I explained to him. And while we were having a little chat, a major came up and he jumped in on the conversation and told me that once again I was wrong, no matter what. The regulations were that officers didn't wear lanyards. So we had quite a heated argument by this time. I was getting a bit sick of these smart-ass senior officers being so lacking
officious,
knowledge,
really.
Lacking knowledge about what a platoon commander had to do in the field. So we ended that argument in rude sort of terms. This major was pretty upset at the end of it. Anyway, carry on. I'd finished my series with the Provost Court, and to make a wee change, I took some days off after that and was entertained by a guy that I'd been defending, having been in possession of military equipment. And when I went back to Yamaguchi and reported into the adjutant, he said, "Oh, Snow, how are things? Good. And how'd you get on? Did you enjoy it?" And we had quite a wee chat. And I said, "Yeah, I just arrived back. I'm off to my quarters and get sorted." He said, "Oh, before you go, come and meet the new CO." I said, "Oh, God, we've got a new CO. Where did Bill go?" "Never mind, come and see him." So in I go, march in, stand strictly to attention, salute, and then I see the new CO. And he's the major that I was being very rude to in brigade mess only a few days before, a week before. So that was the end of a beautiful friendship.
So things got off on the right foot there?
No. He didn't last long.
And that was, I don't know if we should mention his name or not. Anyway.
Well, Colonel Hollis.
Colonel Hollis, yeah. Yeah. Like you say, it seems a silly thing to kind of...
Well...
tell you off about, really, doesn't it? But...
I mean, some things, some officers thought that was important.
Yes.
I didn't.
No, yeah. So, how were you able to communicate with the Japanese themselves? Did you learn some Japanese words?
Oh, yes, a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, we've got a couple of Japanese here at the rest home, and I talk Japanese to them. Not very much now, because I've forgotten a lot of it, but...
This is something you inevitably pick up when you're there, yeah. Mm. So you mentioned your CO, Titchener. So he sounds like he was tough, but probably quite a good man, was he? Or
extremely tough,
yeah.
But then that came from his experience in Greece, Crete, Egypt, Italy.
Mm.
He'd joined the battalion in Burnham in 39.
Wow.
And was risen to lieutenant colonel.
Mm. So he'd seen everything, really, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be...
We certainly respected him.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand the battalion had this coastal runabout called Brunetta, which was named after his
That's
wife.
Right, yeah. He married an Italian lady.
Yeah.
I got a photo of her.
Yes, yeah, I think I've seen that photo too, yeah. So that runabout, that was involved in anti-smuggling operations.
That's right.
So did you have much to do with that?
No,
or?
I never on that side, never on that coast.
Right, right. But that was stuff coming in from Korea and...
Yeah, that's right.
Going into the black market, I suppose, yeah.
That seemed to be quite a holiday to me.
Right.
Working there.
And yet, I think you also mentioned about having been part of supervising the first elections there.
Yeah, that was interesting because the candidates were allowed to, give liquor or whatever. They were able to treat their visitors and when they were talking. They filled them up with sake. There was a bit of a scare because the population, or a large part of it, were quite out of control.
So what do you mean by that? Were they just not... rowdy. They were all drunk, you mean?
Yeah.
And was this in Yamaguchi or again?
No, they were in Tokyo. Tokuyama.
Oh, yes, yeah. And what were you, you know, were you standing over ballot boxes and
no,
things?
No, we were just alert.
Mm. So you are like guards in the street or something? No.
Didn't have to show a presence.
No.
We had to be ready for whatever
happened.
Went wrong.
Yeah.
Because the police wouldn't have coped anyway.
So it wasn't like a election here, which is a fairly sedate affair.
Well, and you're not allowed to treat.
You don't need to get drunk in an election, do you? Well,
no, but the candidates aren't allowed to treat the
guests with
liquor,
or anything. And I think you said you were sort of quite often required to take part in these marches and processions and things once again as part of that.
Yeah, it was just part of
the job. Yeah. So were you involved at all in, there were like repatriation work going on too, wasn't there, of Koreans?
No, I didn't.
No, nothing like that. No. Yeah. So speaking generally, I mean, Japan must have seemed very different to New Zealand, and I sort of wondered what some of the differences were apart from the, you know, ones we've touched on. Like some people have talked about public bathing, for example, being something that they weren't really used to, or the communal long drops and such things. What do you remember yourself, the things that's stuck with you?
Yeah, lifestyle was quite different, their lifestyle. And it was even more primitive than our backcountry places would have been back in the 1800s. Very, very primitive.
Mm.
And their practices were, in our minds, pretty primitive.
Mm. Some people have talked about having these house girls to do domestic chores. Did you ever?
Oh, yes, I had house girls. They had their nickname for me too. I didn't know it for a while. But they were talking about Yuki-san.
Yuki-san.
Yuki-san. And I found out later that Yuki is snow.
Ah, so this is where the...
So I was Yuki-san. And I was actually good enough to listen to their conversations and understand a lot of it, which was quite amusing. You know.
Yeah. Were they quite cheeky?
Oh, yes.
And they, you know, I know some people have said it was a bit unnerving at first to have these women around doing all this, doing everything for you, by the sounds of it, they were pretty...
Oh, they thought nothing of guys being naked. And I actually think that that's a good thing.
Mm.
Having been to a Japanese bathhouse and everybody's in together... People, it's just another body.
Yes, yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, you know. Not quite so prudish, maybe. Yeah.
Well, it's not a crap.
Yeah. But this aspect of having them do all your chores and everything, was it a bit strange at first having this person coming in? We got used to it pretty quickly.
Don't even go as far as cleaning boots and.
Mm.
Yeah.
Can you remember the name of your house girl, just out of curiosity?
Tanaka, T-A-N-A-K-A.
T-A-N-A-K-A, yeah. And so she's, was that in Yamaguchi as well?
Yeah. Michiko, M-I-C-H-I-C-H-O.
Mm.
That was the name of the Japanese princess too, Michiko.
And they were just...
the room.
Okay. Oh, okay, I'll just stop this for a minute.